I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am your father.
Get it?
TalkSTL.com, real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 344. Wait for it. Oh. The box office report.
Do you remember how to do these, Kevin?
And there was much rejoicing.
I don't know if I'd say much.
There was like a smattering?
There's a moderate amount of rejoicing.
I would even go not so moderate.
Fine. Here's the challenge to the listeners. If you're listening to this box office report and you're excited to have one of these back, post on the group. Tell us.
We'll get three.
Yeah, right. That's it.
That's more than we get for movies.
That's
though.
A good point. Yeah. That's a very good point.
I want at least four. So you guys tell us how excited you
are. We had, what was the last one we just posted? They got some pretty good. Was it Downsizing? Had some traction on it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people.
Oh, there's
about
a
that.
Lot of discussion.
Well, before we get off too much, we should probably go around the table and introduce ourselves.
I'm Paul Harris.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Paul is returning for us, which is always nice.
I think he is our Alec Baldwin.
Wow.
I think that's the way that works. I think okay. He's our longest returning guest.
Wait a minute. I have to go yell at my daughter on the phone.
She probably, drunkenly, she probably deserved it.
Do we have?
Yeah, they normally do.
No.
Do we have that jacket ready for him?
Would we have a jacket?
Oh,
like
Dan?
On SNL when you have like that.
The red blazer. You yeah.
Dan was supposed to bring that and he forgot.
Yeah. Oh, and then he was supposed to sing a song, I think, because they usually sing when they get that.
Dan's going to come back and just be like, what has happened? Why do I have so much stuff to do?
It's going
to
be 45 minutes of him just playing catch up.
Yeah.
So, shameless plugs, don't forget we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. It helps us tremendously. People who were kind enough to join the League of Show Sharers this week. Here we go. Travis T. Witt, Jason Herndon, Julianne Jordan, Chris Magic Man, Timmy Tuzoons, Tammy Sherman Powers, Brad Hyen, Dustin at Nerds at Night Gaming, Jason Weesey, Chris James, Griffin Fox Smith, Tom Comiskey, Brent Smith, Chris Sanders, Librarian Cynthia, Lane Levanway, Musings of a Cosplay
Witch. She's back.
She's back. Richard Lawson and Jason Michael.
Thanks, guys.
And also, we should mention Jason Michael was kind enough to have me on his podcast, Atlantic SC. Oh. And we talked about The Last Jedi. If you've already listened to our discussion, ours is a lot more just, we don't do a ton of preparation and research. We go through,
speak
of course.
Speak for yourself.
We don't do a lot of work.
Yeah. Let's be real here.
We don't put a lot of effort into this is what we're getting at.
Yeah. These people listen to the show, Joe, so it's no surprise.
Yeah.
But, you know, ours is obviously a lot looser of a show. We joke around. We go through the plot. The guys over at Atlantic SC, that's Lee Brady and Jason Michael, they do a ton of research, sometimes weeks of research, and they really go in depth into analyzing film and deeper meaning and define different words. It's really fascinating. So they had me on the show. I was there for trivia facts as I listened to them.
What was their deeper meaning for Flying Leia?
Well, it was interesting. Go listen to the episode. I don't want to spoil it, but one of them thought it was really funny, and one of them thought it was awesome. So go find out why.
Neither one of those reactions have we had on this podcast.
Right, so that's why it's a completely different show.
I can't believe you just asked Kevin to spoil something.
I know,
yeah,
sorry. What was I thinking?
Crazy.
But it's fun, though. Honestly, it's a completely different discussion, but entertaining in its own right, and you know, those guys are fans of our show, and it was really nice of them to have me on, so thank you.
Well,
and
those guys on that show should share the show. Besides Jason.
Oh, you're calling Lee out.
Calling him out.
Well,
how many times have you shared his show?
All the time.
Do you?
Nope.
Okay. Then.
Now, to be fair, he does live in Ireland, so I think that's called an Irish share.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Where am I supposed to be from?
Am I supposed to be offended now?
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that. Yeah. No, because all the Italian jokes, like, we're allowed to make fun of the Irish every once in a while.
But that's different, though, because that's true. All of that is true.
There's no hyperbole whatsoever.
Now, are you...
Hyperbole?
I like mine better.
Hyperbole?
I said that on purpose.
Sure. Yeah. I did.
Yeah, let's...
Okay, let me look up this word real quick. Hyperbole. Now, are you related to Lee since he's from Ireland?
Because all the Irish are related. We probably are. We're breeders.
Yeah, that's true. You are.
We're breeders.
Yeah.
I have 40 first cousins.
Good Lord.
What?
And that's
so weird. Even as an Italian, I have four.
And to put that in perspective, my mother was an only child. And so the 40 first cousins are entirely my dad's side. That's not combined from two sides of a family.
Wow.
Yeah, that's one side of the family.
That's a lot of potatoes.
It is. So we love our potatoes.
Potato famine.
That's totally real. Like if any Irish person is ever like on the news, like, well, that's offensive, us and potato. No, it's not. That is 100% true.
My favorite Irish joke is Belushi on SNL just going. It's like, you want to tell about the luck of the Irish? How about the bad luck of the Irish?
Well, we got out of there.
Yeah, it's true. You did.
At least we
all. You did.
My
side
did.
Right,
so, you know.
If my buddy Rory's listening to this, just stop it now. And then, because he's actually from Ireland.
Oh, the name like Rory.
I know, yeah. Rory Sullivan.
And it's probably spelt like R-A-I-S.
No, it's spelled the way it's
spelled.
Apostrophe.
It's not. His name is Rory O'Sullivan.
Oh, there's nothing worse than having a punctuation mark in your name. You can't, like,
on the standardized tests.
Like, internet hates you. You can't fill out a web form. It's awful.
I just think it's funny that you warned poor Rory.
After the fact?
No, Lee lives in Ireland still, and you're talking about this. Rory, stop listening. Rory. We're talking about
Lee.
Well,
I know that Rory listens to episodes of movies that he's not going to see in theaters, and I don't know what Lee listens to because he doesn't share the goddamn show.
All right, well, there's your challenge.
Oh.
Wow.
Shots fired.
I will say that was a good callback.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Lee, for the last time. Appreciate
Never again.
It.
Now, you're fine. It's Joe, though.
Yeah, I'm the... Yeah.
That's true. You're never coming back on the show.
Done.
We also have a new iTunes review.
Hey.
You didn't even ask me.
No, because you cheat.
Plus, we had a discussion
we did,
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I knew they were there.
I was like, I'm not playing that game. I'm not going down that road.
They got two episodes this week because they were kind enough to review.
Yes, they did. So this is from... God, I hate the font color. You thought I was going to cuss, didn't you?
I didn't know what was going to happen.
Font color on iTunes. That gray on white?
Yeah, it's the worst.
And then it's like a 3-point font.
In Comic Sans.
Yeah. I'm getting old. And I'm like, and I can't want...
We need to get Tom a magnifying glass to hold over his computer screen.
I need one of those.
Didn't they used to have those? Like, didn't they have, like, big magnifying glasses you could put over, Game Boy?
Yeah.
for the elderly to play Game Boy?
Yeah, play some Tetris. Yes. It's so your mind doesn't go to mush. That's
because when they were kids, they were Game Lads.
The Game Lads.
Master Game.
Game Rapscallions.
Remember when young boys weren't Mr. yet, so they were Master?
Yeah, that was all
that's
creepy.
Funny.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's weird that it would go to that, because Master used to be like a hierarchy. Like the Master was the head of a household or someone. And so it's
the
funny.
Slave owner.
Yeah, that's where I was going with it. I was like,
well, and I mean, I'm talking about in British... You know,
they also had slavery in Britain.
Right, but this is not regarding slavery. What I mean is that it's like that start off as that. Then
why
are
you whitewashing history, Kevin?
Good Lord, go read the thing.
When I was 6 years old, none of my slaves called me master. None of them.
He was very liberal. He was one of the more caring masters.
Read the thing.
For some reason, one of them called me Debbie. I don't know why.
You were also making snack cakes.
That's right.
That's correct.
Yeah. Paul's snack cakes are the best. Debbie's, sorry.
Yes. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Little
Debbie's. Yes. That's where we're going.
Not
here.
Lil. Little.
What's happening?
Okay, the review we got says, I don't always agree, but I very much enjoy the podcast. These guys make me laugh, cringe, roll my eyes, and sometimes blow my drink out my nose.
Yes!
Wow.
That's the dream right there.
There it is.
I don't always agree, and sometimes I feel... What?
Now, I mean, here we go. Are we supposed to reimburse? Is he looking for reimbursement for his drink?
Yeah, for his sodas.
Because I don't really want to add more disclaimers to the show, but we're not reimbursing you.
That should be. We should put that disclaimer. We are not responsible for any drinks coming out of your nose.
We will only reimburse you up to the amount of a vest.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's a hyper-local reference.
That is a hyper-local reference.
What's the, is Shasta the ICP drink?
It's no, Fagos.
Fagos. All right. Shasta, I apologize.
Yeah. Like, don't do that with us.
I'm sure you could give people double the value of this podcast back.
There we go.
Yeah. Double what you paid for it.
Exactly.
So they say, I don't always agree, but sometimes I feel like I'm back bartending at Carrollton Bowl, Bridgeton, 1987.
I don't know what that means. That's, I mean, I know what Bridgeton is.
That was bowling alley in Carroll. North County. I'm NoCo, so I know that. I'm sure I went there.
That's when I was born. Is this my father?
Were you conceived in a bowling alley?
I have no idea. I don't know my father.
It would explain a lot.
Wait a minute.
Dad.
Is that a real thing?
Is that what Dad meant by pin setting?
Wait a minute. Did you just say that on the podcast?
Yeah.
This is like a Tommy Wiseau moment of a look into Kevin's past that nobody had any information on ever before. Yeah. And just drops it. Like, it's just like, yeah, I didn't know my dad. Anyway, moving on. Time out.
Well, I want to hear more. I think this is him. Keep going.
He says, maracas would have forever been shaking.
Yeah, that's probably
true. I
keep
coming back for more. There. So thank you.
Don't talk about my mom like that.
Well, clearly she didn't come back for more. Or maybe she did.
Maybe she did. Dad did. Who knows?
You started this.
Yeah.
You opened up this can of worms.
I'm not denying it.
This can of psychological worms.
Your father is.
Message me, Dad.
Yeah.
Thanks for the review, though. Thanks for coming back into my life to post an iTunes review.
Wow. Makes up for all that lack of child support.
Yeah. And love.
Maybe my ex-wife will do that for one of my children.
Here's
one day.
Hoping.
Yeah, fingers crossed. So, so there. That's all of the house cleaning we needed to do. We will now turn our eyes to the box office. Kevin has his abacus at the ready.
Yeah, let me just blow the dust off of this thing. Jeez, it's like, thank you for keeping this in storage. And I want to do two things today. I thought since 2017 just ended and we haven't had a box office report since then, I'd like to go over the 2017 numbers, talk about the top 10 domestic films of 2017. But let's go through this week's top 10 first, then maybe we can transition into that. So this weekend, in its third week in release, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, a 31% drop, making $34.5 million. That's a $242 million domestic.
That's great.
In three weeks.
I did not expect that at all.
I don't think they expected that either.
How much foreign? $157 million. So it is approaching $400 million worldwide on a $90 million budget.
This is why The Rock is getting his Fast and the Furious spinoff.
This is why he's the highest paid actor. It's the charisma. It's the, you know, it's like the guy is so likable. Even if he's in a movie where, you know, everyone else isn't necessarily doing anything spectacular. It's like
Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, exactly. It's like The Rock shows up on
Baywatch.
Yeah, The Rock shows up on screen and you're like, okay, I'm on board with this. The guy, he just smiles into the camera.
It's one of those things where The Rock that I knew, like, there's no way. Like, this is, you're going to be a wrestler forever. There's nothing else for you.
But, you know, there was always, I mean, I grew up watching The Rock.
He was the one that there was always that, like, that next level of.
I will say that, like, so I kind of sort of paid attention to wrestling during that time frame. Like,
even if you weren't a wrestling fan, you knew what was going on in wrestling.
Well, I did, because at that time I worked at a radio station called The Rock, 97 FM, The Rock, classic rock.
So you couldn't avoid the jokes
but we did a lot of promotions with wrestling, so I needed to know that because our listeners cared,
right?
And so I remember even back then I was like, this is all so stupid. But when he came out, I was like, but this guy's
he's fun to watch.
But I'll pay attention to this.
Him on mic, that charisma, the eyebrow and the know your role, shut your mouth, Rudy Poo candy ass. Like, he just had all that.
You felt bad for anybody that had to cut a promo with him. Because it was just like, well, I'm just going to stand here and you do your thing. I'm gonna try it. He and Mick Foley still to this day have the highest rated segment on Raw, which is The Rock, This Is Your Life. And it went, like, it was supposed to be a 5-minute segment, and it went for like 20 minutes. And Vince McMahon was losing his mind backstage because they're just cutting into time. And then they got the ratings back, and it was just like, oh, never mind. And like, it was crazy, the ratings that they were pulling in.
And at that guy, I mean, at his peak, and then, I mean, he was like 97.
He debuted in 96.
And I'm not talking about when he came out, the tag team. I mean, like, when
he was
the
tag team.
Yeah, he came out.
I don't think you should.
He came out as Rocky, as the blue chipper, Rocky Maivia.
Yeah.
And then,
oh, that wasn't a tag match?
No, no.
I thought he was in a tag match.
He was in a tag match, but he was not in a tag team. But yeah, so it was like...
Well,
90,
that's what I... Okay.
Survivor Series 1997 is when he debuted.
Yes. Was it a tag match?
It was a... Yes, it was an
okay.
Eight, it was
so,
it was an 8-man tag match, but he was not in a tag.
Wow,
team.
Wow, pedantic about the details, Jesus!
But yeah, so 97 to
my point
he
is
left
he was,
in like 2002, I think, is when he stopped being a full time.
But
wrestler.
Tag team would imply that he had a partner,
so he had three of them. But it was just a
like
it,
my ex wife,
exactly like your ex wife.
Wow,
but it wasn't
no,
like
I'm
it,
that he, number's way too low.
It wasn't like he was part of the Legion of Doom. Like yes. It was just he.
Okay, but that wasn't my point. My point was when he was solo and, you know, the millions and the crowd would erupt.
That wasn't even how it started. Like, so they tried to make him, like, this baby, a good guy with no, you know, he was a perfect good guy. And the crowd, like, it's to the point where they thought he doesn't really have it. And then they turned him heel.
Yeah.
And it was game on.
Yeah.
And they were just like, just say whatever you want.
And it was
he
nuts.
Was like, okay.
The reaction. It's like that guy was a star. And you knew there was something different about this guy. And it's amazing to see how he's grown. And I mentioned it briefly last episode. But when you watch his early work, the early films, you know,
you
it's
can
like.
See it a little
it's
bit.
It's a little rough, but he still has that charisma. And you can tell he was going places. And now when you see him, I mean, he is a certified A-list movie star.
Yeah.
The guy has got it.
He's going
to
have to mess up pretty bad. To lose that status,
yeah, I don't think.
And but that's the thing is, like, he's making good choices.
Yeah,
like there was
there's some bad ones.
Like what? Besides Bay, but I mean, like he almost has the Sam Rockwell syndrome, where like he can be in a bad movie, but he's not bad.
Oh, that's probably true.
Yeah,
I haven't seen them all, but I just mean it's like, you know, there are some that we don't really think about that he's been in, but the hits are.
Massive
phenomenal,
hits.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, this movie is doing amazing. Almost 400 million in 3 weeks. So, I didn't expect it. We'll see where that goes. But, and it deserves it. Go listen to our episode last week.
Yeah,
I think we all.
It was a lot of fun. Jumanji 3.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be coming. Don't worry. Number two is Insidious The Last Key. Now, is this a new one?
It's such a weird franchise.
Well, yeah, it's a new one.
It's right there.
Yeah.
It's like
screen says week 12, so that's why I questioned it. I thought it opened, but.
It says week 12?
Yeah, I think it must be some kind of mistake.
They wanted to make sure it got in there for awards consideration.
Yeah, right? So, but
that's got to be a typo.
It's like, they killed this character in the first movie.
Is it like, an old lady?
It's Lynch. Lynn Shay.
I just saw an article about this.
Is that Bob Shay's wife? Bob Shay, who used to run New Line. Like, Bob Shay created New Line.
You got
me.
Right,
I don't know.
Yeah.
But, like, I think they killed her character in the first movie, and then the last three, I think, were flashbacks. Wow. I think. I've only seen the first one, so I don't really know.
But I haven't seen any, and I just saw this article about how the head of this horror franchise is a 70-something-year-old woman.
It
like,
was Patrick Wilson,
wow.
I think, in the first one. It was Patrick Wilson
and
in 1 and 2.
And he turned into a 7-year-old woman?
No, but they transitioned away from him.
Yeah,
to her.
What
an
interesting switch.
Yeah.
So the movie opened to $25 million, so that's...
It's a Blumhouse special.
For a little horror film. This did have a $10 million budget, but...
What did the first one have, out of curiosity?
The
budget
first
wise.
One. So let's see. Going down to, chapter two. Back to, 2011, Insidious opened, opening weekend, $13 million on a $1.5 million budget. It ended up with $54 million domestic and $43 million foreign on a 1.5.
I forget what it was for, but I saw like a poster for a movie, a Blumhouse movie the other day, and Blumhouse was almost as big as the title.
Oh, really?
And I just thought it was interesting that, like, they've become a brand name
synonymous with quality
to the average film goer enough that they're putting their name big.
I wonder, like, I wonder if it's going to get to a point where it's like they become like Quentin Tarantino Presents, you know, like where they're not like, I wonder if there's a way to differentiate between their blockbusters and then. Oh, that's right. There is Tilt.
Tilt.
That's right. That's like the ones that are just like, we don't really know about this. Happy Death Day, I think, was.
I think the analogy is in Quentin Tarantino, but Roger Corman.
That's good. Yeah, that could be. That's very true.
Says he never lost a buck. Right?
I believe it. Yeah. I mean, when you put $25 in a movie, you know.
So anyway, big opening for that one. So
if you put $100 million into a movie and you lose a dollar, you never notice.
You never.
It.
Yeah.
You put $25 and you lose a dollar, like, you notice it.
So good for Insidious. We'll see. You said it's a fourth one. You think
it's
like
the fourth
a third
one,
prequel or something like that? Interesting.
I'm sorry. One and I think one and two are. like the same time period. Okay. Like it's Patrick Wilson's in both of them. And then 3 and 4, I think, are flashbacks.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, we'll see where that one goes, but not a bad opening. Number 3, Star Wars The Last Jedi, making a few bucks. $24 million in week 4. That's
what is that? Have you guys talked about that
no.
at all?
No.
Is it like a remake of Return of the Jedi?
We're
something?
Waiting for the VOD.
Yeah. Some indie movie? I didn't see it.
Yeah, who knows? So, yeah, I think $5.72. Oh, no, wait. $572,900,000. And that's just domestic. So it crossed the $1 billion mark, I believe, last week, $573.4 million. And so it is up to $1.12 billion on an undisclosed budget.
Is that the fastest these movies have gotten to a billion? Like how fast did Force Awakens go?
I think Force Awakens got there faster.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like that's really fast.
And if you believe the Drudge Report, and why wouldn't you?
Yeah, right.
The movie's a huge failure.
Yeah.
What?
I get
all Drudge Report talks about is like how this movie's tanking, and it's
so
weird.
I don't know what constitutes a tank when you do $1 billion.
I mean, it's not doing quite what Force Awakens did, but Force Awakens one had Han Solo.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
do you think that was a draw?
And it was the
absolutely.
Return.
Absolutely.
It was the first after
and
the prequels.
And a 30-year buildup.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay.
So, but this one, so compared to Force Awakens had made $651 million in 2 weeks.
Okay.
So this one is in week 4 and has made less than that, but it's pretty close.
Yeah.
The numbers are still huge. So, there's a lot to factors into that one. But
I think Drudge is right. This is killing the whole franchise. There won't be any more of these movies. That's
yeah,
sure.
They're done. They're just taking the toys off the shelf, not even putting them in the clearance bins.
Right.
No.
They're just
taking them off.
They're
recycle.
Taking them off the shelf. And if you go there, there's just a note apologizing.
It's like, really sorry.
We're really sorry we did this to you.
So, Disney's owned Lucasfilm for like 4 years, I think. I think the deal was 2013.
Okay.
And they've made $4 billion back.
Sweet. What did they pay? Did they pay $4 billion for Marvel as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
They paid $4 billion for both.
Okay.
So, and then like $62 billion for Fox.
No, it was like 56. 56
well,
and some change.
There's a debt there that they didn't.
Oh,
they
is that
took
right?
On.
Okay.
So they
okay.
paid 60 something. They got a deal because they took on like 12 in debt.
Okay.
Whatever. But it's like a $63 million.
Once you got $100 million in debt, not a problem.
Yeah.
Don't even worry about it.
I know it's
we're gonna go put out a Star Wars movie and take care of that real quick. Yeah.
I know it sounds counterintuitive, but Fox is worth more.
I would agree.
Fox has, you know, 50, 60 years of catalog, and you know,
I just realized,
and they get Avatar.
Well, they also get Aliens and Predator. So like Dark,
yeah, and they get Avatar,
Dark Horse,
yeah.
But Dark Horse Comics, like their main books were Star Wars, Aliens, yeah. and Predator. And now they've lost all three.
Yeah.
All they've got now is Hellboy. Like, that's about it. They've got some other Mignola stuff,
well,
but
just wait for the bank statements to clear on this Fox deal and just wait.
That doesn't count. That doesn't help Dark Horse at all.
They'll be owning Dark Horse. Don't worry.
That could be true.
Just
yeah.
Wait for them to build their reserves up a
DC,
little bit.
The DC's just like, oh, God, please don't try to buy us.
Yeah.
I think if that, I don't even
they'll
think,
never buy DC.
I don't think even our government would let that happen.
No. I could see them buying, like, Dark Horse. I could see that. But not.
Yeah. Now that's a monopoly. People talk about, isn't this a monopoly? Like, if Disney Marvel buys DC, that's a monopoly.
I just had that conversation. I'm just like, no, because there's Warner Brothers and Sony, and there's other studios out there that will.
Why would they
Universal.
Why would they buy Dark Horse? What could Dark Horse have that they possibly want?
You just said all they have is Hellboy, right?
They've become, like, those, the Predator, Star Wars, and Alien stuff.
But they license that. Like, you don't need to buy. If you buy Dark Horse, you don't get that.
No, but you would get Hellboy. You would get Abe's, like, the whole Hellboy universe, which I guess doesn't really.
Right. So
matter.
Far, all you've said is Hellboy.
Yeah.
You just keep saying Hellboy.
I'm trying to, like,
if he says
have,
it more, it'll be more impressive.
Yeah. They have Goon.
Concrete.
That is Dark Horse.
Nobody cares.
There was almost that Goon movie. Did you ever see that test footage?
No.
So Fincher was going to do an animated Goon. With Clancy Brown as the voice,
yeah, I saw
and
that.
Paul Giamatti as his little buddy, and it never got.
I completely forgot about
yeah,
that.
There was there was a proof of concept. I was like, uh-huh. Yeah, let's do this, and that never happened. But yeah, they don't really have any. The big one that Disney, like, if Disney bought Image, that would be on another level.
Yeah,
like that would be bad for anybody else. But I don't. Dark Horse doesn't really have anything.
Well, I think they've got enough to keep them busy for at least a couple
good.
Of years,
yeah.
So we'll wait for them to make that money back. But anyway, so yeah, Star Wars The Last Jedi, we're talking about over $1.1 billion in 4 weeks. So.
And almost none of that is China money. Cause China,
did they not release it?
They did, but China doesn't care.
Oh.
Huh. China, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, because it wasn't released. Like, what drives Star Wars is nostalgia.
Right.
And And there's no nostalgia for the property there.
Now, this movie has magic and ghosts in it. Usually China doesn't let you, you know, it, there's ghosts, yeah. Literally force ghosts.
There's
and
a
magic
force ghost. But yes,
well, it's still there. It's still there. I mean, it's a problem Ghostbusters had.
It is, that's true.
So it's interesting that I wonder how much editing, if any, goes into the Chinese Star Wars.
I wonder if they just they dub it to where they explain it as not being ghosts somehow.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, you can cut that Yoda scene out. Like,
well, I wonder, yeah.
If you don't, that Yoda scene isn't crucial to the story. So they could edit it out.
It's a good scene, though.
It's great for us.
In that scene, they just dial up the translucency so you're right. Solid. It's
gone. Well, what's funny is that when you see Yoda and his back is facing the camera, you get the blue bubble. When you see him in person, they lose that. Like, he's a lot less transparent from the front than from the back. I thought it was weird they dialed it down depending on the camera work.
Maybe it's when he showed up. Like, that's him materializing, and then he was full.
No, I mean,
there.
They would cut back and forth, like, to Luke with his back. But anyway, so clearly they could turn that on and off if they wanted to.
No one here thinks that was as cheesy as Bob Newhart on The Big Bang Theory. With that blue thing.
Nobody on this show watches The Big Bang Theory.
So
wrong.
So I haven't watched a lot of Big Bang Theory, but I've seen a few clips, and I tried to explain this to these guys. I go, it's Bob Newhart. He plays a character called Professor Proton,
yes.
Which is supposed to be like Bill Nye.
Yes.
And I feel like he is like losing his mind. Like, it's so bad and hard to watch. Like, I feel like he is like has Alzheimer's, and they're like feeding him. Like, he's so slow on his delivery.
It's interesting if you go back and watch a 1970s Bob Newhart show, that's always been his delivery.
So that
the
is
same delivery
okay.
he has in his 80s, he had in his 40s.
Okay, so that's
and
just
on
his,
on,
okay.
his, on Button Down Mind, his 1960 comedy album, which was the first comedy album to debut at number one. He's always talked with that stammer.
And it's like that? Okay, because I felt bad for him. Like, they got this guy to come do this, and he's like, he looks like he's lost. Like.
No, that's his shtick, actually.
Okay,
that's what you want from Bob Newhart.
Okay.
My daughter, who was not familiar with any of that stuff, said, what's wrong with this guy?
So she said the same thing. Because I've seen some of his stuff, but I mean, not a lot, and it's been a long time. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, they kidnapped him into doing and brought him to do this role. He really does. Like, he's looking around.
They paid off his handlers.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, his stand up was always kind of one sided conversations, mm-hmm. and the humor would come from you filling in what the other side had said,
right.
and then getting his reaction. Ah. So it was all based around him having a reaction to something you didn't hear, and was just brilliant.
Yeah.
Just and you cannot overstate how huge that guy was.
Oh, my God.
Really? He had those first three comedy records he put out, the Button Down Mind, Button Down Mind Strikes Back, and what, the Return of the Button Down
Mind. Something like that.
Yeah. They were at one point, they were the top three albums in the country.
Wow.
I mean, like, wrap your head around
that. And
this
is in the 60s?
This would have been, like, 61,
yeah,
62.
60 to 62.
Yeah, okay. And but, yeah, I mean, he basically kind of invented what they call the party record, which is now, like, a stand-up.
Well, no.
Well, I guess the party, but people would listen to them at parties.
The party record for white people.
There we go. That's fair.
Red Fox invented the party record.
Was he doing them before that?
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, he's the Perry Como of party records.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, he was writing his own stuff.
Yes.
He wasn't stealing other people's material.
Yeah.
The Dane Cook of the 60s.
If you want to hear any of his stuff, go find, and it's probably on YouTube or other sources, go find the one where he plays one of the publicists for Abe Lincoln.
Yo, that's brilliant. All right.
As Abe Lincoln is going to give the Gettysburg Address.
Okay.
And it's classic. And another one he did was being a guy who was back in England when Sir Walter Raleigh called or contacted them. These were all phone calls and Newhart's bits. Called them to explain tobacco.
Yeah.
Which no one in England
knew what they knew. Yeah. All right.
There's another good one where he's trying to explain baseball.
Yes.
And
Abner Doubleday.
Yeah. And he's, you know, and they're like, we were looking more for like board games. Something like two couples could play.
And that's one of my favorite Carlin bits. Is the comparison between baseball
and football.
Baseball and football,
yeah. And then, of course, the driving instructor.
Yes.
Okay, so you were talking about the one-sided conversation.
Yeah.
And I remember you talking about the driving. He was like, I can either do this bit now.
Yeah, that's a version he recorded, like, I guess in the 90s, what he did for the Nick at Night special.
Yeah.
Where it was the button-down concert, and he's like starts going the drive. Do you know what I'm talking about? I won't bore you if you know what I'm talking.
I know the bit,
but I mean, I don't know if you've seen this version.
I probably have.
He starts off and he's like, "So I'm going to do the driving instructor bit," and the crowd kind of like, he's like, "Where I'm teaching a woman how to drive," and the crowd's kind of like, "Oh," and he's just like, "I know that it hasn't really aged the best,
yeah,"
and sometimes people are get a little offended, and he's like, "So I don't want to offend anybody. So in an effort to not offend anybody, I've changed it from a woman to a Chinese man."
And then, he starts doing it.
And then he starts doing like just broken gibberish Chinese, like ching chong. Rah, rah. And then he does that. I mean, he commits. He does it for like 15, 20 seconds. And then he stops and he's like, "Okay, so I can either do this for another 8 minutes or I could make it a woman."
It's up to you.
Jeez. Oh, so I'll have to go back and find a lot of those old bits because I'm sure I haven't seen
the Lincoln one is my favorite line is where he's like, well, he's critiquing the first draft and he's like, what did he say? He's like, I guess in the original one, he didn't say 4 score. And
87 is like, not as good as 4 score as 7 years ago.
He's like, it's like if Julius Caesar showed up and said, "Friends, Romans, countrymen, I got something I want to tell you."
Abe, do you have enough of the envelopes left?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll send some more.
Yeah.
he always does it like that.
Right. Yeah. Like that's like,
I don't have a stutter, and he doesn't really have a stutter, but he has a stammer, which is what makes the timing so perfect.
Oh, absolutely.
But on TV, in character, it's weird.
It is very weird.
But not as weird. Watch me bring this back. Oh. Not as weird as the blue glow around Professor Proton.
Yeah.
Particularly when he's in the Jedi uniform on a couple of episodes of The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a clip of that. I didn't see it on Sunday. I'm just like, what is happening here? Anyway, but yeah, so go watch that if you want to. But it sounds like maybe go listen to the old Bob Hope or Bob Newhart special.
You can listen to Bob Hope, too.
That's Bob Hope, if you want. Yeah. Go watch some road movies.
Early Bob Hope. Like if you dial in on Bob Hope in like the 60s and the 70s, especially the 80s and 90s, if all you know of Bob Hope is from TV, like I get but if you look those early Bob Hope movies, those were Road to Morocco,
Bing Crosby.
Oh my god,
not for me.
I love Never that stuff. And I also think that I know he's not a joke writer. Like you know he didn't really write any of that
write
stuff.
For him.
Yeah, but the timing. He's another one where his timing is just.
There's a guy from St. Louis that used to write for him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like Mickey. He's working for the sheriff's department. He was working for the sheriff's department when I was there, and that like, yeah.
How do you go from?
That's he. But when I say work, I mean like he had a little
he
job
did it
behind
one time.
A desk. Yeah. No, he was there every day, but it was just like he didn't really do anything. Like that was like the old political. Here's a job, Mick.
Gotcha.
And the, yeah,
the best Bob Hope thing I ever saw. Was an SCTV bit that I know is on YouTube because I just watched it with Rick Moranis as Woody Allen.
Yeah.
And Dave Thomas as Bob Hope. And Woody Allen is watching Bob Hope movie at the beginning, just like at the beginning of Played Again, Sam, where he's watching a Newhart.
Casablanca.
A Bogart movie. Not a Newhart. Bogart movie. And he's walking out of there and he starts acting like him. Well, in this parody, he starts acting like Bob Hope and decides he's going to write a movie for Bob Hope. And the two of them together, the impressions are 100% right.
Just
perfect.
Yeah.
And the timing between them and the writing, it's a skit that was so long, it went past a commercial break
and came
into
back.
Another segment.
I mean, it was almost like a 30-minute sketch. Yeah. It just kept going. But it was great. Ugh. And Woody Allen is like, I mean, if once you know it, you really can't unsee it.
Oh,
but like,
you mean Moranis' impression of him?
No, Woody Allen. If you watch a Woody Allen comedies, he is completely impersonating Bob Hope.
Yeah, in the early ones.
Ones. He is especially like the one where it's just blatant is in Everything You Always Want to Know About Sex But We're Afraid to Ask, mm-hmm. when he plays the court jester.
Yep.
And the court scene. Like, that is...
Really?
That's a Bob Hope
I mean,
stick.
That could have been a Bob Hope movie. Yeah. Like, that... I mean, it is...
Interesting.
I mean, he is a huge Bob Hope fan, and you once you know that, it's kind of hard to not see it.
Right
like,
on.
Oh, yeah. Like, you're doing Bob Hope. You're just doing it through this kind of...
Prism.
Nerdy Jewish character.
Yeah.
But, like... if you could sound like Bob Hope, you would be doing that right now. You just can't.
There's a scene in the parody where Rick Moranis, as Woody Allen, breaks the fourth wall and starts talking to the camera, and Dave Thomas, as Bob Hope, says, "What are you doing? Talking to the camera? Wait a second, that's my shtick."
Yeah, oh, that's funny. Well,
as soon as you just picked up Strange Brew.
Nice. Oh, I love Strange Brew.
As soon as you said Rick Moranis is Woody Allen, like, that's a perfect fit. Right? I could see that.
And when you see it, you actually, after a few minutes, you stop realizing it's Moranis and Thomas. They are perfect.
So good.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'll check that out.
It may be among the best impressions I've ever seen of anybody.
Nice. Especially because Thomas is doing, like, later era.
Low-key, Palm Springs Hope. Bob Hope.
Yeah, he's not doing, like, Bob Hope from the 40s. Right. He's doing Bob Hope from the 70s. And it's always interesting, like, when you see somebody do, like, a Jerry Lewis, but they do a Jerry Lewis from the 80s, not the Hey Lady Jerry Lewis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, you don't
like
see
Telethon Jay Lewis.
Right.
I just saw a video clip of the, like, knockoff Jerry Lewis, like, the duo, like, the Martin and Lewis. There was a movie where he actually sued the guy.
Papillo. It's like something Papillo, and they...
Yeah, it's a weird... The name sounds nothing like Lewis and Martin,
And the movie is... It's like... Bela Lugosi meets a Brooklyn gorilla.
Yes, that's the movie you're talking about. Yeah, and it's like...
What is it?
The guy is doing Jerry Lewis's...
Looks and sounds. It's like Sammy Papillo or something like that. He looks and sounds just like Jerry Lewis.
I mean, the haircut, the outfit, and he's like... It's like, hey, lady. It's like the way he talks.
And they found a guy that looks like Dean Martin. And then Jerry Lewis ended up suing him. And it was like... And then he actually ended up working for Jerry Lewis. Because when they would do the Colgate Comedy Hour, it was live, and he, like, sometimes he needed, like, doubles, or he had to be from, and they would use him as, like, a stand-in.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, really?
That's a funny story.
But, yeah, it's I think it's, like, Petrillo?
That sounds right. Yeah. When I saw that, I'm like, are you kidding me? This guy just, like, stole his entire
act. They did that with Bruce Lee. Like, after Bruce Lee died, if you go back, there are a bunch of movies where it's not L.E., like, so Bruce L-E-E, it was like L-E-I-G-H-L-I-L-E-I, and there were guys that, like, sort of had a similar build and would wear similar pants and a similar haircut, and, like, I remember as a kid, like, Blockbuster had a, like, you know, rows and rows, exactly, of martial arts movies, and I was like, yeah, let's do it, and I wasn't paying attention up to the name, but I was like, oh, that guy, all right, Bruce Lee movie, sweet, and I grab it, and I was like, wait a minute. That's not Bruce Lee.
They did one where there's a guy that looks like Bruce Lee on the cover, and when you go home and put it in your VCR, there was just somebody being like, you're a racist.
Gotcha. Try to get your money back and explain this one. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was Bruce Lee. Yeah. Sorry.
So continuing on the box office, so Star Wars made all the money. Number four, The Greatest Showman. So if you've read any discussion on the League of Show Shares, it's no surprise that I love this movie. It's one of my favorites from 2017. If you're a fan of musicals, it's the same guys, Pasek and Paul, that wrote the music for La La Land, which I know can be hit or miss for some people, but really good songs. It's got like 11 songs on the soundtrack. They're all good. It's a lighthearted, like, feel-good movie. It's not a biopic of Barnum. So, like, a lot the controversy around it is P.T. Barnum was like pro-slavery and animal abuse and all that. Yeah. Like, the movie doesn't touch on that stuff, but it also is inspired by the man. It's not a biopic.
Right.
And it's, if you read the history of P.T. Barnum, the stuff that happens in the movie, I would say, like, 80% of the stuff is not based on real. You know, they used him as a vehicle to drive this point of humanity and accepting people, and it's just a fun movie. So, like, don't look at it for the truth of Barnum, but just go to have a fun with a modern musical. And I'm glad to see it doing well, because in week two it actually broke a record for the highest increase for a movie in over 3,000 screens. It had a 73% increase.
That's insane.
It opened to something like 9 million, so it had an abysmal opening on an $80 million budget, and then made a 73% increase in week two. Now in week three it took a 9% drop from that 73% increase. So this week, The Greatest
Showman. Does he stab anybody in the face with claws?
No, they edited that out for the rating. Yeah,
I'm out.
Yeah. Well, you're not a musical guy. Some people said, like, are you going to review The Greatest Showman? And people are asking about it. And I'm like, Joe doesn't like musicals, so, like, there's one of three that would just... Yeah, it's not worth it. But I'm like, if you...
It's
like,
worth doing it just to make you sit through a musical.
You would not. You're like, you find somebody.
But I'm like, if you like musicals, first of all, if you enjoyed La La Land, you'll like this. But the thing that makes me the most excited about it is, like, last year we got La La Land, this year The Greatest Showman, which in my mind are good musicals.
The year before that was Into the Woods.
That I wasn't especially like the live roundabout theater.
It was a musical though.
No, I'm talking about original musicals.
Oh, I see.
So
yeah, you don't get a lot of original musicals.
Yeah, 2 years in a row to get these original musicals that are, you know, doing really well, La La Land critically, Showman with fans. It's like, I want to see more of that. So when I saw this one's opening, I was like, oh, come on. Like, I want them to keep making these.
Right.
And so, but this shows you that, like, people, not that many saw it the first week, but then they told everybody how good it was.
I want to go see it just because I want to encourage them to make more movies about people that hurt elephants.
Oh, is that why? Okay.
Like, I just like, the elephants have been getting a free ride.
Yeah.
Way too long.
That's, it's time.
It's time. Yeah. Like, the elephants need to just dial it down.
Right.
You're not so damn special.
No, you're not cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Kevin, you like this movie a lot more than I did.
Yeah.
But speaking of La La Land, I just watched that again while my daughter was visiting us over the holidays, and that movie stands up so well.
Mm-hmm.
And all I could think was, who goes back and watches Moonlight a second time?
The guy in Moonlight.
It's
the guy that won the Oscar.
It's a discussion that we could get into for an hour and a half. I mean, I think we all feel the same way. Like Moonlight, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the story, but at the end, after all the buzz and talk about it, I'm like, this is so overrated.
Yeah.
Like
very overrated.
It's not worth the acclaim.
And it doesn't end, it just stops.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, I was really disappointed that I spent the first hour like, where is Cybill Shepherd?
I thought Bruce Willis would be in this movie.
Moonlighting. But yeah, it's one of those things where like they were making a statement as opposed to voting for the best film or something that made an advancement. And I'm all for telling these stories, and that's fine, but don't slap Best Picture on a movie because you want a story out there.
Correct. Like, I didn't hate Moonlight.
No,
I just hated that
all.
It became Best Picture when La La Land was clearly the Best Picture and a movie people will watch for decades.
It's unfortunate. And then, so yeah, again, all of us, like, we're not saying Moonlight's bad or we hate it, blah, blah, but it did not deserve the acclaim, in my opinion, and I agree. I mean, I own the La La Land soundtrack. I, you know, almost wore the vinyl out. I loved the film.
I'm going to make Kevin very jealous right now. So they send us things in the St. Louis Film Critics Association. They'll send us screeners and stuff. So for The Greatest Showman, they sent us the sheet music and the fancy, like,
nice
cover and stuff. And they must have really wanted to win Best Song because it showed up autographed by the composers.
Look
Stop.
At you.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Dead serious.
Do you have a Pasek and Paul autograph?
Yes, I do.
Do you want it?
Yeah.
You haven't seen the movie.
So it's been out for 3 weeks.
But yeah, I've seen it 4 times in theaters.
Wow.
I took my wife to see it for date night.
You know, they have a special program right now with, on your fifth screening, you get a restraining order.
Oh,
is that right?
Perfect.
Yeah. Autographed by Pascal and Martin Sammy Petrillo.
But no, just real quick. So I took Katie to go see it, and for a date night on Friday, I had seen it during the week. Took her on date night to see it. Instantly, she said, this is my favorite movie of all time. We went and saw it at 10 a.m. the next day.
And you
day.
Were really groundbreakers in that. You were the first straight couple to make that a date night.
But, well, we were the youngest crowd, too, probably. But no, we went and saw it again at 10 a.m. after date night, went and saw it again. And then I brought my son and my mother, and my 8-year-old son now says it's his favorite movie of all time.
Oh, that's
like,
cool.
So
of his entire life.
Yeah.
Well, but you know, I mean, he just saw Star Wars too, so like, it's I didn't influence
for an
it.
8-year-old to gravitate to a movie like that.
When
cool.
you're 8 years old, the last thing you liked was the greatest thing you've ever had.
I know,
in your life, whatever
I will,
it was.
True. I will say
true.
This in defense of Kevin, Ryan has killed 3 elephants since he's seen the movie. He liked it.
He
so
also
much.
Skinned a tiger.
Right. Yeah.
He's a learner.
Yeah.
So
it's perfect.
Anyway, it's
he's I'm, also become a racist. I don't know.
Yeah.
What?
No, that's not true. It's not fair. He was always.
That's true.
A
that's
little.
Fair. It's yeah. it's a learned behavior.
Right.
Jeez.
Kevin.
Anyway, so yeah. So anyway, Greatest Showman.
We did not practice.
No.
That's amazing. But The Greatest Showman, so I'm happy that it's increasing. If you like musicals, go see it. But it made $14 million, a 9% drop from that record-breaking increase.
It's also
that is an amazing story.
It's an amazing story, plus it's getting hit with some heavy competition. Like,
yeah.
those are
yeah.
some big movies that are pulling away from, that should be pulling
yeah.
away from
For it
box
to do
office.
A 73% and then a 9% drop
right.
week after week. I mean,
you would think the $80 million musical would
yeah.
be movie number
9-5.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Which so, is, yeah. But yeah. what I would say real quick, though, is like, when I went to go see this movie, I tried to see it with Ryan, which, you know, I tried to bring him to go see it one day. And then it was sold out, and I had groups of people coming into the theater going, we can't see Greatest Showman, it's sold out. All these theaters, because of the opening week, stuck it in their smallest house, four or five show times a day. I'm telling you, groups, they could have sold 10 tickets at a time.
Yeah.
They're sold out. I mean,
so that that increase percentage could have been higher.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they did a disservice because, I mean...
Well,
I get
you,
it.
You can't blame them, though.
When has that ever happened?
Right.
You know, it's like a nine million opening, and then all of a sudden they're just like, oh, by the way, here's a 72% increase. Like,
I mean, what's been the highest bump before that, not counting art house movies that just roll out wide?
Tom asking a poignant
question. That's a joke question right there.
Let me do some research
on this.
It's not about wrestling. He's not going to know.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I'm not sure what it was before that, but definitely record-breaking. And The Greatest Showman is now up to $77 million domestic, $44 million foreign. So I remember the first week, its worldwide income was one-fourth of the budget, and now it's 111 on an 84
that's
in three
impressive.
Weeks. So,
that's super impressive. Huh?
Yeah, and the biggest takeaway from this and the thing that I want to see is more original musicals. Like, I hope that this encourages them that they can make money. I mean, obviously this one was easy to green light after La La Land, but I just didn't want them to stop dead in the tracks.
Plus, you've got some star power on this one too.
Certainly. Yeah.
I mean, obviously not Ryan Reynolds.
Hugh Jackman.
No.
Yeah. Ryan Gosling.
Thank you. Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are definitely A-list actors, but Hugh Jackman kind of has that extra reach because of Wolverine. Like, and obviously, like, the people who are just like, Hugh Jackman is Wolverine probably aren't going to go see The Greatest Showman, but he's got
the name recognition and
face,
the fandom.
Like, yeah.
And plus, the guy's like a quintuple threat. Like, you know, when you talk about like triple threats, like, what can't this guy do?
Right.
The guy is immensely talented.
Here's my wife's review of Hugh Jackman. There is nothing wrong with that man.
Yeah, exactly. It's like he can do anything.
The first time my wife saw Thor, Chris Hemsworth, she was like, that's a lot of man. I was like, yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah.
He's built like a brick poop house. But yeah, that's
I know, honey. It's like looking in the mirror.
I know.
I'm used to it.
It's the cross-eyed
the fun house.
Yeah. I like that. That's fun. All right, so that's number four. So now number five, Pitch Perfect 3, which I heard is not good. Has anyone seen this
movie?
Okay,
now for the record.
The 2 was supposedly awful.
It was awful.
I don't know if it was like...
One was such like a lightning in a bottle.
One was great.
Fun.
One is great, but it's not like amazing. Like, it's not like groundbreaking. It was just a fun little movie. I think 2 followed in the same vein. Like, it wasn't.
I haven't seen it, so I can't.
It was fine. Like, it was just the same. It was the same movie, basically. They were just. It was kind of like Glee, you know, like in Glee, where in the first season they lose. Like, it's just. I don't think. I guess they don't lose in Pitch Perfect in the first. Spoilers, they don't lose. But it's kind of, they're just
they
like...
Don't? I thought they did. They thought they were all excited about winning second or whatever. Isn't in Pitch Perfect, they don't win, but
you're thinking of Bad News Bears. No, that could be true.
I'm pretty sure they don't win.
Okay, so I think the second one is they win.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just the Rocky 2 of the Pitch Perfect movies. And I haven't seen this one, but I feel like the bar has been set, like, unfairly high for these movies.
If the first one wasn't as good as it was, but I don't agree. I think the first one was great.
I don't disagree.
It was not just a fun little movie. Like, it was extremely fun.
Yeah.
And the second one, they made a lot of stupid decisions. I guess we didn't review it, but I did not like it. And I know people that have seen Pitch Perfect 3. Brad Hyens, an example. He loves the first one. Absolutely loves it. And he said the third one was just not good
at all. I just
don't
know what you expect.
Well, you would hope for more of the first one.
Yeah, but if you do, well, all right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, if you do the first one again, then you're just doing the first one again. You know what I mean?
I just think it's
just like a retread.
You just have to jump through logistical hoops to justify why these girls are pushing.
Coming back.
I agree. 30
yeah.
and still.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And it's like with that.
Still in college.
The second one, one of the stupidest things I thought they did with it was at the very end, they set it up so that only one girl, which was the new girl, Hailee Steinfeld.
Yeah.
One girl was on the team or whatever this is. So it's like you have this amazing cast of the first one and you love these characters. At the end of the second one, they all leave and leave one new character.
Well, my guess would be because they didn't think they were going to get them all back for a third one. So they were trying to set up a third one where, you know,
whole new people.
Where all new people, or they would just do a cheap direct-to-video knockoff.
Like Glee.
Like American Pie or something.
Yeah.
And I get it, but it's like they made the movie and
so clearly they
keep getting them back.
I think they all, so Elizabeth Banks directed this one.
She directed the second one.
She did the second one as well. Okay, so I think that's why they got him back. It's like this is them doing her a favor.
Well, I also think they realize like this franchise, I think they realized like what I was thinking, like this is stupid to get rid of everybody but the new character, yeah. And like you got to get them back.
Well, you if know? You want to keep it as a major movie, yeah, but if right. you want to spin off into a VOD
right.
you don't type
need,
of thing,
you got
then it makes
sure.
then it makes yeah. sense.
You can, and you can't afford to pay Anna Kendrick.
Well,
right.
That's Pitch Perfect 4 apparently, but this week it made $10 million, a 39% drop. So is this was an opening week, right? This is like second week.
I believe this is I think it opened Christmas.
Okay, I think the numbers are a little wonky on this, but I'm showing $10 million on this one. No, sorry, let's go to this. Box Office Mojo has $79 million domestic, 34, which is 109 on a 45.
That's
so
all
that's,
right.
That's more than I thought.
And I'm sure they sell a lot of soundtracks.
Yeah, that's true. So that maybe not doing so bad. But yeah, I've heard as far as you know the film goes, it's not very good. Right. So
it's doing okay. It's certainly not doing what they thought it was going to do.
Right.
And yeah. the second one, even though it got lambasted by critics, made a ton of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. Number six, Ferdinand. So that is the John Cena trying to be the Rock stardom.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That's not going to be
every
a
time
thing.
I see him, like that new Blockers movie.
Yeah, that looks awful.
I'm just like, can we stop doing this? Like,
yeah,
he's not the Rock. Like John Cena's great in his cameos as the drug dealer, as the gay boyfriend, like
as Amy Schumer's boyfriend.
Yeah,
yeah, where he's gay.
Have you seen
know?
The outtakes like, for that?
No.
I think
they
I
are
funny.
Phenomenal.
Yeah,
like he is, like to his credit, it's all ad libbed, and but, she can't keep a straight face because A, he's on top of her, but B, like she apparently he's really funny. Like naturally funny.
Oh.
Yeah.
They should okay. do more of that. But the thing is, like, you know why it's funny? Because it's ironic. It's like, oh, right. it's John Cena doing something like that's so weird, right? But like for him to be a lead in a film and try to play a character which isn't just ironic John Cena, it just doesn't work. And
Is he the dad in that movie?
He's one of the dads, yeah.
Okay. Is it called Cock
Blockers?
Blockers?
It's a picture of a rooster and it says Blockers.
Okay. Yeah. I saw that poster and I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Rooster Blockers?
Yeah, Rooster Blockers. Yeah. That's what it's called. Rooster Booster.
So, but I've heard, I mean, Ferdinand actually got pretty good reviews. Has anyone seen it?
I have not.
I heard it.
Is it a Blue Sky?
I think it is Blue Sky. Yeah. It's getting good reviews though. It's but this it was number six this week.
Ralph
Thank you, Raul Julia.
Nope.
7.9 million was a 30% drop from that. It's you know, besides Star Wars, which is a four quadrant. I mean,
right.
this is pretty much the kids' movie right now. And it has made $70 million domestic.
I would argue Jumanji is the kids' movie right now.
Well yeah. that's true, but I think that
yeah.
also appeals to
a
everybody like this
kid,
is more
yeah.
like the young like
just
kid
for
kid
kids, yeah.
yeah but $80 million overseas, so it's made over $150 million on a $111 million. I mean certainly not doing I mean talk about rough competition. Jumanji
yeah, no,
and Star
totally,
Wars
yeah.
stealing them away certainly. But I heard it's pretty good, so I'll probably check it out at some point. But the movie of the week, this is one where I'm surprised. I don't know about
I'm
you
not.
guys, but I'm just surprised it opened so low. Molly's Game coming in with $6.8 million estimated the first weekend wide release. So it is up to $14 million domestic, no money overseas, and I don't have a budget on it. I just thought I was expecting a little bit of a bigger opening on this one.
Given what it was going, again, same problem. Given what it's going up against, this is about where I thought this was going to be.
There's so much out right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, there's a lot out.
And it doesn't seem to be breaking out of the pack from an awards
Which
favorite
is,
standpoint.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Plus,
we'll get into
half
it.
The country wouldn't leave their house because of the weather.
That's also true.
Yeah, yeah. That's very true. So we'll get into that one next time. Number eight, Darkest Hour. Gary Oldman, give me an Oscar. $6 million is a 9% increase. So that one is seeing, you know, a little more success, wider release.
Is this the Christopher Plummer one?
No.
What's
this
that
is,
one?
Darkest Hour is Gary
Churchill.
Oldman as Winston Churchill.
Okay. Yeah.
So that one has $28 million domestic, so increasing slightly week to week, 5.4 overseas, so it's around $30 million. I haven't seen that one either. Anybody?
Yes.
Is it good?
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard
it?
Great things.
Oldman is unbelievable.
Oh, good.
And it's not just the makeup that makes him unbelievable.
His performances.
It's his performance.
I'm glad because, you know, we've talked about this. Gary Oldman's made some weird movies lately where, you know, he's a bad guy in Planet of the Apes, you know, that's like in a different movie. And, you know, it's like the guy
I
liked
him in Planet of the Apes.
It just seemed like he was in it. Like it was weird the way he played it up, and I've seen him in a lot of strange roles lately. And it's like I want to see Gary Oldman, like amazing actor Gary Oldman. And so I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, it's really good.
Awesome, that's good to hear. Coming in at number nine, Coco. Like
wow.
Yeah, didn't I? With the holidays, I guess family's still going in droves to see that. A 20% drop in week seven with $6 million. Coco is at 192.5 million domestic, overseas 367 million. So we're up there
they
around.
Can't be happy with that. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, what?
We're up there around 575, getting close to $600 million on an undisclosed budget. But, yeah, and the movie is great. We talked about that.
Every dollar of it.
Yeah, listen to the podcast. Go see the movie if you haven't. Fantastic. So we'll see. I guess the big thing is what's going to get best song. That's the question.
Oh.
So The Greatest Showman's up there. Coco's up there. I think Coco's going to win. I don't think... Greatest Showman will be.
I mean,
there.
I can say I think Coco's going to win too because I haven't seen The Greatest Showman.
But I mean, I love the song.
Bold stance.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You think "Remember Me" is the song that gets it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I love The Greatest Showman soundtrack's been on repeat. I love all those songs. So I think like "This Is Me" is, you know, an anthem. It's a song that voters would gravitate to. It's about embracing the differences and humanity and everybody, regardless of their look, their shapes, their sizes. But I think "Remember Me" is a shoo-in, so that's my guess anyway.
It's weird. You have The Greatest Showman soundtrack on repeat. I have the new Foo Fighters albums on repeat.
Yep.
I've been listening to the new Monkees box set.
Oh, yeah? How is it?
It's the Monkees.
That's fair. Yeah. That's like, yeah, right
Did
on.
You hear him say what
the
he
Monkees,
was listening
yeah.
to? I don't know. If you...
Is it new stuff or is it remastered
no, it's
stuff?
Their second album, like in a deluxe edition.
Oh, right
all
on.
Sorts of.
Oh, good. You got Tom talking about the Monkees.
Well, you know, I got to wait on everyone for a while.
We did 30 minutes on
wrestling. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's only fair.
I should have known better than to make a... I went to make a quick wrestling reference.
That wasn't going
to
happen.
My
especially
mistake.
Especially when you make a wrong reference.
We've only done 350 of these. You should. There's no reason you would know that by now.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, but that's debatable if I made the wrong reference when he debuted in a tag match.
You said he was in a tag. He was in a tag team. He was
wow.
not.
That's okay.
And I would just like some credit for my restraint and not making an ex-wife joke when we were talking about tag teams. Right. Like that's
there it is.
Yeah.
And to round out the top 10 is the yep. So just barely edging out our favorite film of the year, Shape of Water.
Ugh.
Number 10 is All the Money in the World, $3.5 million, a 37. That's
the Christopher Plummer.
Oh, okay.
J. Paul Getty.
Yeah, right.
And apparently they named it that ironically.
Yeah.
When you call a big guy tiny.
Yeah.
Right.
The 3.5 puts it at $20 million domestically. I think that one opened on Christmas. Another $1 million overseas. So it stuck around $20 million. I saw the movie. I thought it was phenomenal.
I did too, yes.
The performances, Michelle Williams and Christopher Plummer.
I think it's the best work Michelle Williams has done.
It's her year. I want her to win.
Yeah.
Didn't she win already? Didn't she win for something?
No.
I don't think so.
Not for
Brokeback?
She may have a best supporting.
I feel like she won best supporting like the year after Heath Ledger
this
died.
This would be lead, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
and you know what? I saw her on Broadway with Jeff Daniels in a two-person show in which her energy just exploded off the stage. And the same thing happened in this movie. She finally isn't playing somebody's wife.
Yeah, crying on, like, I mean, not that she doesn't cry, but the crying wife in distress.
Exactly.
Yeah,
she is actually a real character in this in and of herself. Yeah. She is playing somebody's wife, ironically, but she's the lead in this movie, more so than Christopher Plummer, who is also fantastic
in the role.
That impresses me more than anything else because he was brought in
8 days.
That's what he had to work
8 days.
Yeah.
Like that's
and
impressive.
I heard something like it was either 300 or 800 shots they had to redo. They did it. And I mean, his part was 8 days. I will say, so watching the movie, aside from the brilliant performances, Plummer and Williams never been better. Amazing. Mark Wahlberg's good too, but the other two steal the show.
Does he talk with a Boston accent, even though it's not set in
Boston? No, he's actually pretty good.
He's really good though in it too. But aside from that, watching the film, which I thought was fascinating, I never looked at it and went, oh, that's where they had to edit out Spacey.
Right.
That looked weird. I mean,
it matches 100%.
You would if you did not know the controversy or the story, you would never notice anything.
This isn't Weird Lip Superman.
It's not. And there was one scene I think where they had to, like, a lot of them were Plummer reshooting these scenes, but there was one where they did have to do some weird CGI stuff. I'd never noticed it until I read about it. So go see the movie; it's fascinating.
I know it's not doing that well at the box office, considering all the hype that it got after the Kevin Spacey thing. I think that's a movie that lives on in Netflix or Amazon Prime for a long time. People are going to come to that movie for years.
It's real good. I want to, for the performances alone, even though I know the story now and everything, I was like, I want to go watch Plummer again and Williams again in this.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. So that's the top 10. Real quick, I would like to go through the 2017 films and just tell you what they made this year.
Sure, let's blow through
last
that
year.
Real quick.
So, 2017 domestic gross. Star Wars The Last Jedi opened 12/15 and already has made $555 million. The number two film, Beauty and the Beast, $504 million, and that opened back in March. So wow. to see the wow. amazing power of both owned by
also
Disney,
Disney,
by
movies.
The way.
Yeah,
so,
right.
But just to see that difference right there between the one and two and the right. release dates, pretty amazing. Number three, Wonder Woman.
Good
so
for that.
DC's.
And they have a new, they fired everybody. They have they did. They fired all of their creative people.
Yeah.
And
oh,
they,
right.
they brought in the guy that was in charge of New Line. So he's responsible for
Lord of the Rings.
Lord, not Lord of the Rings, no. but It. And
oh,
all the
newer
the,
new
the newer new,
new
line
new
line,
new, okay.
new line and now he's in charge of the DC like the DC cinematic yeah. stuff. They've
okay.
fired whoever the guy was and Jeff Johns. Like they're both like yeah. you're out.
Isn't Jeff Johns still in charge of
he's still the
whatever.
Chief creative officer yeah. so like he's gonna be there to ensure
like things
continuity
make yeah.
and integrity compared to the comics yeah.
but he's not calling the shots.
Nope. Yeah. So they've got a whole new person involved.
And let's also note all three of those movies, the top three movies of the year, female leads.
Yep. Every
yeah.
single one.
It's pretty impressive. Number four, Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2. So another superhero film. It's amazing to
well,
see.
Another Disney film.
Here's the trend. Yeah, $389 million. Spider-Man Homecoming, number five. Oh. So you wonder.
So great.
You wonder oh. why.
Did you not like it?
No.
What?
Oh, I like
really?
It.
It's interesting how polarizing and it's not like 50-50 split, but like everyone loves it, and then this other group of people hate it. It's like the, you know what I mean, they don't just think it's okay.
What sets you off about it?
Yeah, what?
Oh,
do we have another hour?
No, we don't have enough.
Okay. Listen for another special in the near future.
Oh man, I love that movie.
So yeah, number six, It, speaking of that one, it the movie. I didn't
Stephen
I know,
King,
right?
Yeah.
Three, no, it's not the 90s one.
That's
right?
True.
Isn't yeah, that what the 90s? Yeah.
Is that
what
who would have thought a movie about IT people in
right?
a company?
The It crowd
the
mad right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Oh man, what a great show.
Stole their shtick. But It made in the number six about $327 million domestic. Number seven, Thor Ragnarok, $312 million domestic. Number eight, Despicable Me 3 with $264 million. Number nine, Justice League,
God,
making that top
it.
10 with 200, or I'm sorry, that one is, yeah, $226 million.
Just fell backwards into that money. Like
yeah.
there was.
And the number 10 film, just slightly edging out The Fate of the Furious, Logan made 200.
Oh, good for it.
Yeah, $226 million domestic, whereas The Fate of the Furious made $225. And that just edging out Jumanji, another
oh,
December
really?
Release. Jumanji at number 12 with 219.
Also, yeah, that's
so
impressive.
Yeah.
So by the time it's all said and done, it'll crack the.
It should crack yeah.
the total mm-hmm. for year movies.
Yeah. So yeah. So an interesting year when you look at like Paul had mentioned, female lead in the top three, and then it's just superhero movies. I mean, that's what
that's
we're getting.
Where
that's where
those,
the money's
those,
going.
Those are the new blockbusters.
And you wonder why we're getting, you know, 10 a year.
I'm interested to see. Well, we're not, though. Like, they're going to slow down. So you've only got Ant-Man and Wasp, Black Panther and Avengers, and Aquaman, and that's it. There's no other superhero movies next year at all. Granted.
There's no DC. What? DC, Aquaman, yeah.
But that's, they're not yeah. doing, like, Flash has been pushed back to who knows yeah. when. I think they're going to retool that whole thing now that they've got the new guy in charge.
They
yeah.
should.
Yeah.
It'll be
but yeah, like they're taking a break from the superhero movies.
Well,
so
they
much,
need to.
Oh, yeah. You can't pump
that's
those
the,
out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I think
enough money to float them for a year.
I think Black Panther is going to be massive.
Yeah.
That's going to be huge.
If the buzz around, it's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is the extended box office.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
So I guess that's it for this episode. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
I'm Paul Harris on the Twitter thing at Paul Harris Show.
And this is Joe. You can follow me on Twitter at Joey Butts, B-U-T-T-S 21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you would like to continue the conversation online, you can find us at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers or on Twitter at Real Spoilers or at our website, realspoilers.com. While you're on your internet, you should go to iTunes. Rate, review, subscribe. Helps us tremendously. And as always, we greatly appreciate it. So coming up on the next episode, we will tackle Molly's Game, which I'm very excited to have Paul Harris back for that one because you are a poker expert, right?
I'm
call you that?
I play poker.
Aficionado.
But you know, I feel like
more about it than you guys. That makes me
an
expert in the
damn
room.
Sure, but
that
I feel like you know more about poker than the average bear.
Stay tuned to the next episode and find out if that's true.
And you have had an in-depth conversation with the subject, the title, the titular, and I mean
oh.
that... It's not dirty, actually.
No, it's fine.
Although it works that way, too.
Yeah.
The titular
Molly Bloom
person.
Correct.
Of the film Molly. Yes. So you will have some, I think, some very good insight. And you know a lot about the backstory. You can kind of fill us in on who these celebrities really are.
And between now and our next episode, you can go to my website, harrisonline.com, and listen to that interview with Molly Bloom.
Oh, absolutely. Is, yeah. You should do that.
Pause it. We'll just wait for you again. Like
okay.
We do. Yeah.
Okay. So so
you've just pressed play again. Okay.
Right.
Wrap it up.
So that's what you have to look forward to next time. So thanks for tuning in. And until then, you've been warned.
I see what's happening. Yeah. Face to face with greatness, and it's strange. I know it's a lot, the hair, the bod. When you're staring at a demigod, what can I say except you're welcome? For the tides, the sun, the sky. Hey, it's okay, it's okay. You're welcome. I'm just an ordinary demigod.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.